Hello, everyone, and welcome back into a fabulous new Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. We are joined today by an incredible dance artist, Allison Manning, who is the co-executive director of the Harkness Dance Center, as well as the director of Harkness School of Dance. And she is also part of Dancing the 92nd Street Y, a 150th anniversary celebration, which is happening on March 12th at 7:30 p.m. at Kauffman Concert Hall. You can get your tickets and more information by visiting 92ny.org. Also happening the same day, an exhibit that is showcasing the incredible work at the 92nd Street Y over the 150 years it's been around, called Dance to Belong, A History of Dance at 92NY, will open, and that will run through October 31st at the Weill Art Gallery. So a lot of great things going on, starting with this beautiful performance, and I think the perfect person to tell us more about this is our guest. So let's go ahead and welcome on Allison Manning. Welcome to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Thank you so much, Andrew. I'm so happy to be here today.
I'm excited to have you here and to be talking about this production, Dancing the 92nd Street Y, a 150th anniversary celebration. And could we start by having you tell us a little bit about this event?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So as your listeners may or may not know, the 92nd Street Y turns 150 years old in March this year, which is astounding. And despite the fact that I know I don't sound like it, I've been here for a little bit of time, but certainly not through the 150 years of this organization's incredible history. So I feel really honored to happen to be working during this moment when we get to celebrate such a rich history. And one of the really special things about my role here has been the really exciting opportunity to curate the show. And it was an amazing moment when the organization decided that they wanted the official celebration of this anniversary to be dance focused, which I feel like in the arts is not something that always happens. Dance, we always joke that dance is sort of like the stepchild of the performing arts, where we're like the extra leg that everybody's like, you know, never funds quite enough and never gets quite as much, you know, press and whatever. So this has been a really exciting moment for me as a director and a producer to get to curate. And so with that said, we really wanted to highlight, as we were thinking about this celebration, the rich history of really incredible companies and artists who were groundbreaking in the field of modern dance, who made this their first home, and simultaneously honor and kind of look towards the future of this organization in thinking about pairing some of those historic companies with the next generation of new voices in the field of dance. And so the curation of this program stems from that. And so we're programming the Limone Company, the Martha Graham Company, and Ailey 2. And those three pillar companies are going to be paired with three new voices in the field: Omar Roman de Jesus, Jamar Roberts, and Hope Boykin. And, you know, the show itself is going to run where each company, each pillar company, performs a historic work. And then we see a newer creation by the younger sort of contemporary artist. And then we move into the same functionality with each company pair as we go. So it's a really fun way to look at both history and the future kind of simultaneously.
That's fantastic. Now, I kind of want to build off of that. You mentioned that you're a curator of this piece. How did you pick the companies and the pieces that are going to be performed?
So, you know, the Alvin Ailey, Martha Graham, and Jose Limon were all artists working in sort of the early 1900s that happened to need support and need a stage to present their early works on. And back in those early years of the sort of early formation of the modern dance movement, they were working against mechanisms in this city and the world in general that were really geared towards supporting white, classical ballet companies. That was really what dance was in terms of a professional societal perspective. And so all three of these artists had that tide working against them. And then simultaneously, you know, a lot of doors were not open to people of color, people of different sort of historic origins, immigrants, all of the above. And so the 92nd Street Y happened to be a place where the directors and the folks involved wanted their doors to be open to everyone. And so they said, oh, come. We'd love to present you on this stage. We'd love to give you studio space. And out of that rather auspicious decision came literally, this is the place where Alvin Ailey premiered Revelations for the first time. And that piece, for dance lovers who know it and those who don't know it, is literally the most famous piece choreographed by Alvin Ailey. It's done by the Ailey Company every single year at City Center. And it had its start here, and nobody else would present it. And similarly, Martha Graham presented a number of her early works here that nobody else wanted to present because they thought they were too out there. And similarly, Jose Limon presented some of his first works here as well. So, you know, I chose the works that we are presenting partially because these choreographers had their start here. And so their rich connection to this organization and its history is very apparent and is very special and important to us as an organization. And I didn't choose the specific works that are their most famous works, because we've all seen them a bunch. So I went about talking with the current directors of each of those companies about work that they felt would really represent the history of each of these dance companies and speak to the work that was made here at the 92nd Street Y, but also might be a new experience for some of our dance audiences who haven't seen all of the works of these companies. So Limon is going to do There Is a Time, which is a beautiful piece choreographed by Jose Limon many years ago. It speaks to so many things about the transience of time and the ups and downs of life and the fact that there are good times and bad times and fast times and slow times, and that we have to wade through challenge in order to come out the other side. And so when we're thinking about sort of where we are in our world right now and where this organization is in terms of looking back to 150 years of history and looking forward, this felt like a really important piece for us to use as kind of the foundation of this program. So that was the first piece I chose. And then from there, we kind of built forward, and Graham is going to do, the Graham Company is going to do a suite of Appalachian Spring sections. So they're not doing the full Appalachian Spring, but they're reconstructing some sections of the piece. And Janet Alber, who's the artistic director, is going to narrate a little bit in there so that the audience who may not know this piece as well can really understand the context behind it. And Ailey too is doing a really rich program, including Blues Suite and a number of other historic works that actually we haven't seen the company do in a long time. And they're a couple of duets and a couple of solos and a couple of group sections. So, yeah.
That is wonderful. Wonderful. I love it. I love the story behind it too. That's incredible. So as we head into this performance, which is just days away, what has it been like developing this show?
Well, it's been a ride, let me tell you that. I'm working with, you know, six different companies, which normally on a performance program, unless you're doing a major festival presentation like a City Center night or something, you're not doing that on a regular basis as a curator. So it's a big task. And I will say, you know, the beauty of it has been that, you know, I described the three, what I keep calling the pillar companies, these historic major voices in the field. But what has been really a special part of developing and curating and working on this program has been getting to meet with and talk with the three contemporary artists who we have on this program on a pretty regular basis. And one of the most special things that I think has come out of that is that, for instance, Omar Ramon de Jesus is this young artist. He's Puerto Rican. He is part of the LGBTQ community. He's somebody who is at a really early, but like sort of like critical moment of like breaking into the field in terms of his own work and his own career. And this, from his own words, he has described as really providing a platform for him to be showcased and celebrated alongside some of the biggest names in the field, which in a way is part of what I think the 92nd Street Y can do so well, right? And what I, as you know, the director of programming in my role here for dance, feel like is something that I have this unique ability to offer young sort of up and coming artists, which is this platform to say like, you are on the same stage as these historic, incredibly successful, iconic artists, and you deserve to be. And not only do they deserve to be, but it gives them this launch pad, because automatically the press coverage, automatically the audience numbers mean that so many more people suddenly know about them. And it allows this opportunity for their career to kind of have this moment that might allow for more support, more programming, more. And so I think for me, leading up to this program, getting to work with Omar, Jamar, Hope, around just the idea of them being kind of part of this next potential canon of greats in the future, right? Like, whoever knows who's going to be the next greatest artist, but they could be. That has really been an exciting part of the buildup and the lead up to this program, is really getting to provide them studio space and technical support and production meetings and things to make sure that their work is going to be just phenomenal and really supported alongside these major names in the field.
Stupendous. That's truly wonderful. With all these great companies and performances happening, and of course the celebration of 150 years of the 92nd Street Y, is there a message or a thought you hope audiences take away from the show?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a similar message to what the 92nd Street Y has hoped that people are going to take away from this 150th anniversary year, which is that we're really looking back to our past and celebrating it, but simultaneously and almost more importantly, looking towards the future. And as I just articulated sort of long-windedly, supporting kind of what comes next, right? Like, what is the next generation and why are they important? But more importantly, the only way they can become important is by having a platform and having financial resources and having support behind them to make work, which is exactly what the 92nd Street Y did for these artists in the previous generation. And so I think, you know, the message I want them to take away is that we are an organization who supports artists in all phases of their careers and hopes to support in pretty major ways early and mid-career artists and kind of creating their launch pad for, you know, hopefully a successful and exciting career in the field.
Yes. Yes. My final question for this first part is, who do you hope have access to this program?
I hope that anybody who wants to see and celebrate dance and dance history has access to this program. I also hope that this program and the fact that it's celebrating this kind of pivotal anniversary moment for this organization is able to also create a moment going forward for dance at the 92nd Street Y in particular, that means that dance is not only important, but it's vital to what we do at this organization, and that it isn't just a special moment for 150th anniversary celebration, but it's such an important art form. And there's so many artists who need a platform and need support, and that we can hopefully keep offering that and doing that more and more as we go forward.
For the second part of our interview, we love letting our listeners get a chance to get to know our guests a little bit better. Pick your brain, if you will. Sure. And I would love to start with our regular first question, which is, what or who inspires you? What playwrights, composers, or shows have inspired you in the past, or just some of your favorites? And since we are focusing on dance as well, I want to throw in, you know, dance pieces or choreographers in that group too.
Gosh, it's a hard one. I'm gonna give you so many because I recently read an article which spoke directly to my soul. It's a friend of mine who works in the fashion industry, and she was interviewed by her alma mater about her success in kind of transitioning from typical sort of C-suite fashion leadership and kind of creating a new company that is operating and trying to push fashion kind of into the next realm of like 3D fashion and like the future of technology and how it integrates. So she's a super innovator, and somebody asked her the same question, and her response was, I read it and I was like, that's my response too. And I just loved it. She basically was like, I have key mentors along the way, but she said, really, as a person, I find that every person that I've encountered in my sort of professional life, in the different jobs that I've had and the schools that I've gone to, has something important to offer, right? And has something that if I have my eyes wide open and I'm paying attention and I have my listening and learning hat on, that I can glean something that can help me become a better leader, a better advocate, a better director, a better curator, et cetera, et cetera. And so I'll start with that by saying, like, I truly feel like kind of everyone who I've encountered since I launched into the dance scene when I was a little kid, but specifically coming to New York City and attending Marymount Manhattan College and going to the dance conservatory there and getting a BFA in modern dance, everyone along the way, including up until this point, I kind of feel like has offered me something that I can take with me. But on top of that, there are definitely key people, both as mentors and also in terms of choreographers and companies that I'm really inspired by. And I think, you know, number one, I would say is the director of my college program when I was there is a woman named Katie Langan. And she was a ballerina. She danced with New Zealand Ballet and a number of pretty major ballet companies in New York and the US. She danced with Twyla Tharp and one of her in sort of her original company back in the day. And, you know, and then sort of moved out of her professional career and took over the dance program at Marymount and really put it on the map. And she was pretty instrumental for me because she came from this professional dance background, but she believes and has created a program at Marymount that thinks that dancers are the smartest people in the world. And that they not only are people who can use their bodies as instruments and, you know, as artistic vessels and create beautiful art, but that often people assume that because dance is a physical pursuit, that dancers are not people that are actually able to be great directors, leaders, producers, sometimes even choreographers. Some people think that. And in fact, she believes the opposite and has sort of created this program at Marymount that has really invested in the professional dancing student body that's moving out and joining dance companies all over the world and in New York City, but are also being taught that you have the ability to affect change and support in the field of dance in myriad ways, and that actually you can do them simultaneously. And so I, upon graduating, without, I think, fully consciously being aware that I had taken this lesson so strongly, basically set out to like do everything in the field of dance that I possibly could. And I was going to do it like all at the same time. And I've kind of made that my career path. And I've been both a professional dancer while I've been an executive director and a producer and a choreographer and a mom and all these things. And I have to credit her with kind of giving me the tools, I think, to feel like that was possible. So I would say that that was pretty pivotal, but I think then like, beyond that, artists who have inspired me along the way are people like Michelle Dorrance, who is a good friend of mine, who I just think is like an absolute genius and one of the best people in the world. And what she's done in the field of tap and rhythm dance and really trying to advocate for its place in the canon of professional dance has been astounding. And I try to work with her whenever I can. She knows this. And I would add David Parker to that list. I dance for him still. And he, to me, embodies a lot of what I just articulated in that long-winded statement about being a choreographer and a dancer and a director and an unbelievably well-spoken and well-educated gentleman in the field who can advocate for dance and funding and writes articles. And so he's an amazing mentor in terms of looking at sort of how you can affect as much change as you can in many ways in the field of dance. And then I would also say, like, I'm one of my favorite dance companies ever is Malpaso Dance Company out of Cuba. I produced them 4 years running at the Yard, where I was executive director and co-producer for about 10 years. And for those who don't know, the Yard is out on Martha's Vineyard. It's a 50-year-old artist residency center and performance center. And I had the great pleasure of cutting my teeth as a professional director at the Yard. And we were able to partner with the Joyce for 4 different years to bring Malpaso as part of sort of a tour through the US. And I just think that in a land where they hardly have any resources, they are like, they're an astoundingly talented, hardworking, and beautiful dance company. So that would be my short list. There's many others, but we'd be here all day if I kept going.
I love that, though. What a fascinating list you've got there. That's wonderful. I would love to know, have you seen any great performances or shows lately that you might be able to recommend to our listeners?
I have, actually. So I'm also a big fan of, well, I'm a big fan of a lot of people. I recently saw Shamel Pitts's duet, Touch of Red, which I think is just incredible. So if you haven't seen Shamel Pitts' work, you should run to see it. He's really straddling the forefront of this term downtown dance, which we don't really use that much anymore, but those of a previous generation used to use it all the time. And sort of this rigorous technical underpinning, which is what he comes from. I also adore Leonardo Sandoval. He just had a show at the Joyce of a new piece that was just extraordinary. So go see him. I just saw on Saturday at New York Live Arts a really moving performance by incredibly talented classical Kathak dancer named Rashna Nivas. I think I said her name properly, but she and I have been having some conversations about her working here in some capacity. And I went and saw the show and I was just like blown away by the musicians and her talent. So look her up. And then also, I mean, I'm in like a new, as in the last like 2 years, but like will be a long-term like artistic love affair with Hope Boykin, who just former Airly dancing superstar, but is, you know, we gave her a couple years ago when Taryn Kashuk Russell was running the dance center and programming. Taryn gave Hope her first full evening opportunity of her own to choreograph a work here. And it was just utterly moving. And basically now Hope is like my, can you do it? Can you do this? Can we work on a project doing this? So she knows that I'm like, she's down in the studio right now working on her piece for March 12th. And I hope to have, you know, many years of working with Hope going forward. So
that's wonderful. Some great suggestions there. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'd love to know, what is your favorite part about working in the performing arts?
Oh, that's a hard one. I think I might say, My staff would probably agree with this. I have a lot of favorite parts, but I actually think if I really had to choose one, I would say teaching and mentoring young people. I despite also wearing all the 18 hats that I wear, I also still maintain a teaching practice here in the School of Dance. And so I teach on Tuesdays, I teach a beginner Horton class to 7 to 11-year-olds. And on Wednesdays, I teach an intermediate Horton class to 10 to 14-year-olds. And then I also teach an open adult sort of like modern Horton-based class. It's not a total Horton class, but that's my modern sort of teaching background. Yeah, and I just... I mean, my staff knows, like, no matter how beleaguered I get in the office with like dealing with administrative junk, like as soon as I like walk into the studio and start teaching, I like turn into this like totally happy, like different person. And I think I also feel that way about like internship mentoring. So like I had a really robust internship program at the Yard, which I created and built up over the period that I was there. And it was all about investing in young adults kind of between the ages of like 20 and 25 who were like stepping out of colleges and trying to straddle that moment where they're entering the professional world, either as a dancer or a dance administrator or all the things, and trying to sort of give them the same vision that I've operated from, which is like, you can do all of it. And actually you should, if you're inspired by development and dancing or choreography and production. And yeah, so I think that's part of my favorite part of my job.
That is such a stellar answer. I love that. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, we have now arrived at my favorite question to ask guests. And that of course is, what is your favorite theater memory or just performing arts memory in general?
Well, gosh, this is a hard one. I feel like I have a lot of favorites. I think that I'm going to give you two because I can't choose. So I one stems back to being a young, like a high school dancer, trying to sort of figure out what was next for me and where I was going in the world, which as we all know, when you're in high school, that's like the most miserable challenges, like, who am I? What am I doing? Where am I going? And I think I come from this really tiny town in northern Vermont. I like really have no business being somebody who like moved to New York City and like ascended to like the directorship of the Harkness Dance Center at the 92nd Street Y. But here we are. And you know, like if we really dial it back, like some of my most formative memories are from dancing in my local dance studio and my local high school, which happened to have a really amazing dance program for a middle of nowhere public dance school or public high school. And, you know, in my senior year, my dance teachers just like kind of took me on their shoulders and like set me up with like, if you want to be a dancer, like, this is where you're going to go audition. This is what you need to prepare for it. We're going to help you. We're going to do this. And having them support me in that way, when basically nobody out of our hometown had ever gone on to do any of these things in any sort of serious way, and having it work, like having me go to audition to like the five biggest named dance conservatories in New York City and get into almost all of them was like, that was like a life-changing, you know, moment for me. And you know, like carrying that forward as I kind of like stepped into New York City, and like anytime things would get hard or you would be like, I'm clearly not cut out for this. Like remembering that moment of just like, no, doesn't really matter how small it was where you came from. Like you've got something that will make this happen for you has been definitely a helpful return point, I guess I would say, for me as I've like gone through my career. And then I would say another really high point, and you're going to laugh because it'll really tell you how much of a geek I am for her, but like is seeing Michelle Dorrance's first set of performances when she had just formed her company, which was a number of years ago now, but down at Dance Space at St. Mark's Church, which is where she was given an evening. And rather auspiciously, David Parker sort of curated that evening, and he asked Michelle to make work, and she premiered Sound Space, which has become now her seminal like company work, which just had its 10th anniversary performance. And I will never forget sitting in that audience, and just as a tap dancer and a, you know, person who wished that tap was more prevalent and more respected, like watching her come alive and then having like watched her career since then and everything that's happened to her, that has definitely, that is a moment that will stick in my mind, as having like, wow, I was there when she like, when it like came into existence. Yeah.
Oh, what great memories. Those are wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing those.
Of course.
As we wrap things up, I would love to know, are there any other projects or productions that you or your company have coming down the pipeline that we might be able to plug for you?
Yes, so after March 12th, we go on sort of a Harkness Dance Center hiatus for about a month and a half from major performances, but mostly because we have other like internal Harkness Dance Center School of Dance projects that kind of happen in between. But our closing event of the 150th anniversary season for dance here is us hosting the Paul Taylor Dance Company on May 13th at 8 p.m. I'll give you the time too. And tickets are on our website. But in keeping with the vision that I kind of laid out for you at the beginning of this interview with our March 12th event, you know, Paul Taylor, in typical fashion, also had his start here in a lot of ways and premiered a number of his most famous works on this stage. And so we're bringing back some of his works that actually haven't been seen in a really long time, part of this really stellar kind of closing night performance here. And I am not at liberty to say who, but I have it on good authority that there's going to be some like superstar invitee dancers that are going to be part of that performance that the Taylor Company is bringing in. And it's just, it's going to be a really exciting night to kind of close out the season with. So.
That is wonderful. Very exciting indeed. And a good lead in to my final question, which is, if our listeners would like more information about Dancing the 92nd Street Y, a 150th anniversary celebration, or about you, perhaps they'd like to reach out to you, how can they do so?
So they can visit our website, which is www.92ny.org, and they can look up Harkness Dance Center in our search tab, or you can click on the Art Center, which gives you all the art centers at the 92nd Street Y, and you can find Harkness Dance Center in there. And they'll be able to navigate to the landing page for this performance. And then if they want to find out more about me or be in touch with me, my bio's on there, my headshot's on there, and they can always reach out to me directly at amanning@92ny.org. which is my personal email. So there, I would love people to reach out and share ideas or feedback or anything.
Wonderful. Well, Allison, thank you so, so much for taking the time to speak with me today and sharing this incredible production, celebrating this wonderful institution and all of its history. I really appreciate your time today. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Andrew. This was a pleasure. I'm so happy you invited me.
Thank you. My guest today has been the co-executive director of the Harkness Dance Center and the director of the Harkness School of Dance, Allison Manning, whose upcoming production, Dancing the 92nd Street Y, a 150th anniversary celebration, is happening March 12th at 7:30 p.m. at Kauffman Concert Hall. You can get your tickets and more information by visiting 92ny.org. Also, there is an art exhibit happening along with this called Dance to Belong, a History of Dance at 92NY. And that will be on display from March 12th through October 31st at the Weil Art Gallery. We also have some contact information for our guests, which we'll be posting on our episode description, as well as on our social media posts. But come out for this incredible celebration, this wonderful show, Dancing the 92nd Street Y, a 150th anniversary celebration, March 12th at 7:30 p.m. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies, and keep talking about the theater.
In a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.